Today we have on Scott Finkelstein. He has a background in wealth management and financial services. Spent 3 years in Japan for that stint. He's played various sales and head of sales roles at companies like Trinet and First Advantage. He's advisor to many startups. He's founded his own business and coaching agency as well. Most recently, he's the founder and CEO of MyWorkout.ai. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Good to be here. The first startup I did, which failed miserably like most founders, would have been in 2012. You know, spent $10,000 on a website and had a partner, and if you don't have both feet in into your business, you have no feet in. I tried to have one foot in Trinet and one foot in the business and failed miserably. So yes, I have experience of 4 decades in the work field. So when young entrepreneurs reach out to me, I know the ones who'll be successful by, are they passionate about what they're trying to build? I don't care if your passion is, I want to be the next billionaire, I want to save the world, but are you passionate about something? And if you have that, you'll figure the rest out, right? They always say, who are the 5 people around you? 5 people in business, 5 people in your spiritual life, your health life, your personal life, etc. Are there people around you who can share stories like we're talking about today? Do you seek those stories to figure out what it means? And are you listening to podcasts like this and the great information, the great people you always bring on here, so you can learn something? Just have an open mind, open ears, open eyes, open heart, and talk to people. Actually care about learning other stories. And when you hear them, how does it resonate? So if you haven't gotten your butt kicked yet in life, eventually, I hope it doesn't, but something will to some level.
Welcome to Funds and Founders. This weekly show is tailored for Austin founders navigating the early stages of their entrepreneurial journey. I'm your host and fellow Austinite, Abhinav Sinha. If you're looking for the motivation and the insight needed to build a successful company, you're in the right place. Today we have on Scott Finkelstein. He has a background in wealth management and financial services. Spent 3 years in Japan for that stint, part of that stint. He's played various sales and head of sales roles at companies like Trinet and First Advantage. He's advisor to many startups. He's founded his own business and coaching agency as well. Most recently, he's the founder and CEO of MyWorkout.ai. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Good to be here.
I like starting things off with asking all my guests, when do you think your entrepreneurial journey started?
That's a great question. Technically, the first startup I did, which failed miserably like most founders, would have been in 2010 or 11. No, 2012, I apologize. That was the first time I said, okay, I had the job at Trinet, and since I don't work there, I can share this now. And I tried to start my own business on the side and broker different insurance type of stuff, and you know, spent $10,000 on a website and a whole bunch of stuff, had a partner. And, you know, as they say, if you don't have both feet in into your business, you have no feet in. And I tried to have one foot in Trinet and one foot in the business and failed miserably.
What was one thing that you learned that you still keep with you today from that experience?
You got to be in. You got to be focused if you truly want to build something. So while I advise other companies now, MyWorkout.ai is my number one focus. And that will always take precedent over anything else I do. Now, obviously, if I make commitments to people, I make sure it fits into commitments I have with MyWorkout.ai. So you got to be in. Otherwise, like they say, you're either pregnant or you're not, right? And that was the lessons I learned along the way, is you're either doing this or you're not, whether it's financially. And there's more conversations about financially. It's not as easy financially for some of us. And so I get, for a lot of founders who are listening, I've got to keep my day job, whether that's a full-time executive job, a sales job, or, you know, I drive Uber or everything in between, because you got to pay your bills. I get that.
Yeah.
But you have to have your number one focus as what you're trying to build, and you have to be passionate about it. And if you don't, if you slip just a little bit on that, the likelihood of your success significantly drops to zero.
You mentioned two things. I'd like to take a slight detour. What do you define as focus? The reason I ask is that can mean a lot of things for a lot of people, right? I've seen founders go all in and be like, hey, every waking, breathing moment is going to be this, right? But in your perspective, with your experience so far, what do you think is focus, and what's the right amount of focus to make an endeavor successful?
It comes into a focus of, one, I see the clear picture of what point B is. We all are at point A today. As I always say in business planning and life planning, you got to see point B with clarity, whether that's a day from now or 5 years from now, depending on what you're trying to do. and you work backwards.
Got it.
So with my workout AI, I can tell you where we'll be in 5 years. I can tell you where we'll be in three. I can tell you where we'll be in 3 days. And I have that clarity. That's the first part of focus. Then the second part is, how am I going to execute daily on a plan to get there? If you can do those two things, your opportunity for success exponentially goes up to where you can make it happen. And then when you're talking to people, because at some point you need help, they say it takes a village. And I've found that out the hard way. I'm a little stubborn. Not that I think I can do it better than anyone else. There's people much smarter than me. I just know I am more. It's when I've been a coach to, I'm coached to advise founders now. Just because you might be able to do it better and you're more passionate about it because it's your proverbial baby, you've got to trust people. You've got to empower them, you know, and if you can mix all that, you're going to be successful.
You said two more things. So clarity. Personally, I feel like clarity comes with a lot of experience, maturity, and just exposure. How did you find the clarity in the current product, the vision? And we don't have to talk about the specific product, but just the art of mapping out your 1, 2, 3, 5, because there's a lot of ways to get distracted. How did you find that clarity?
You put it in two parts, because I'm 53 years old. I'll be 54 this summer. As when I go into my advisors for my startup and I talk to VCs and all that, they go, you're not usually the person we're talking to. It's someone in their 20s and 30s. So I started my entrepreneurial journey very late in life. So someone younger, though, because most entrepreneurs are young, and especially in this new economy, the world we're in, this generation, find a mentor. If you're passionate about what you want to build, and what I'm passionate about, my workout AI is not an app. The app's part one of a much bigger mission of health and wellness and how we democratize access to expert advice in health and wellness. That's not my one political statement, not bought by the politicians and the pharmaceuticals, et cetera, so that people can make a better informed decision throughout the entire world. So yes, I have experience of 4 decades in the work field, but I've had great mentors and I've been a great mentor. So when young entrepreneurs reach out to me, I am happy to find time for them, to mentor them, point them in the right direction. I know the ones who'll be successful by, are they passionate about what they're trying to build? And I don't care if your passion's, I want to be the next billionaire. Great. Yeah. I'm not here to judge you. I want to save the world. I want to, you know, everything in between. But are you passionate about something that your startup is trying to solve or do? And if you have that, you'll figure the rest out. Don't be afraid to make mistakes, because we all do to the day we die. And learn from them, admit them, and find advisors and mentors who will help you along the way. Ask for help. Just, everyone always asks me, in my corporate career, I've sold over $6 billion for companies. I've tried to help them go public. I've helped others, you know, have successful exits. They go, well, how have you always been successful? I go, mentorship. I brought in mentorship. Or if we're too small where we didn't have enough mentors, people to mentor in our company, I helped my people go find mentors. Go on LinkedIn. Right? Go on LinkedIn and just reach out to someone you want to be one day. I love when I get that message. And I post about it on LinkedIn all the time, that message. Hey, same what I'm saying to you. And I do. I've got a few mentees, in my life right now. And sometimes it's just one meeting and then they go on their way. And that's great. I learn from them too, by the way. So if anyone's listening, reach out to me, because I know I'm going to learn from the interaction with you. That's going to make me a better leader. More importantly, a better man.
Random sidebar. What's the best cold open or cold email you've gotten from someone that sticks out or stays with you till today?
Actually, it was on LinkedIn, where we get so much spam nowadays. I still remember it, I guess. The guy reached out. He actually read my profile. So I went to University of Hartford and he made a guess, but that's part of outright. You got to guess. Do I go left or right? And he guessed sports, and he made a little comment, he obviously did some research on University of Hartford sports, which Jeff Bagwell and Vin Baker, those are probably the only two. One's a Hall of Famer. One was an all-star that you'll know in sports. And I connected and I said, great. I go, good job. And then though, 3 emails back and forth later, I go, listen, you got me. I love it. You showed you did some research. You put some time in. You tried to be different, but now just sell me. I go, well, I'm not trying. I go, you are trying to sell me. It's okay. So what do you got? He goes, can I ask for a meeting? I go, it's about time. But like, selling to a sales guy, it's easy and hard, right?
going back to what we were talking about, you mentioned passion. You mentioned identifying whether someone's passionate, whatever it's about. How do you define passion? And how should someone look out for passion versus maybe not the right analogy, but shiny object syndrome, right? Like, how do I distinguish, I'm really passionate about this idea, or am I working towards that shiny object at the end of whatever path I'm on?
Wow, that's a great way to put it. I've never heard it that way. I like that. Oh, we all get attracted to the shiny objects, right? In all aspects of our lives. Passion, I think, is something we can all define. It's for yourself. But for me, I live it. I breathe it. I can't stop thinking about it. And again, I'm present with my kids. I'm present with my friends. I'm present here with you. And I love doing this stuff. This is, you know, is it something that you're constantly thinking about and you're trying to figure it out? And it hurts. It's almost like heartbreak when you mess it up and you cry a little bit. I've cried a lot in this. The idea for myworkout.ai came up at the end of February and I've cried a lot. I screamed a lot. If anyone heard someone screaming, that might have been me. It hurts, but it's a good hurt. So if you feel that inside about something, you don't do that with a shiny new object. Is, ooh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Ooh, you know.
And it dies down pretty quick.
Yeah, exactly. And when if it goes wrong the first time, you're like, okay, what's next? What's over here?
Makes sense. I like that. So going back to your journey, you did a couple stints in wealth management, financial services, and then you go to sales. One thing I wanted to ask you about was, how does someone go about making that transition and why did that transition happen in the first place? Because these seem like two disconnected, disjointed industries or paths to go down. Why or how did you go from financial to sales and what was that catalyst?
So actually, I've always been in sales. I started off in the hedge fund industry. I grew up right outside of Wall Street. So of course, I was going to go get a Wall Street job, you know, growing up in Connecticut, 40 minutes from New York City. And I did. I was always knew that, you know, I'm a numbers geek and I like numbers and I like money. Always been in sales, but to your point, I've sold so many different industries. The first was investment banking. And honestly, my personal story, I was, you know, at 26, got an offer to go to Tokyo with Credit Suisse and built a $5 billion book of business there and then came back to New York City, you know, was well on my way to my big goal, which I told my first mentors was like, what do you want? I want, you know, the arrogant person I was in my 20s. Was I'm going to retire at the time I'm 40. And he looked at me and he gave me my first big bonus check of my career. And he goes, there's your down payment. And I won't use the language he used. He goes, don't be an idiot and show up with a sports car tomorrow. One, we're all going to smash it. And two, you're fired. So I didn't show up with a sports car. But came back from Tokyo into New York City. And this is 2000. And short version of the stories, I worked the block from the World Trade Center on 9/11. I literally watched the first plane fly 100 feet outside my office window. When the second one hit, I ran home 10 blocks to the southern tip of New York City, Battery Park, and grabbed a wife, my wife at the time, and our youngest was 4 months old. And we literally had a front row seat and ran from the falling buildings. And at 10 o'clock at night, after a boat across the river and a friend who somehow managed to be in New Jersey and picked us up and got to my parents' house where I grew up at 10 o'clock at night. And she looked at me and she was from Hawaii. She goes, I've been in Tokyo. I've been in New York. And I know we said we'd retire in Hawaii, but I want to go now. And our oldest, who's, I have two boys, but technically he's my stepson. He was 8. He had just gone back to Hawaii a week before 9/11. So thankfully he wasn't there. And so walked away from it all. And that sent my life on a 10-year tailspin in every aspect. We got divorced 3 years later. I wasn't always the best father in the sense of I was short-tempered and yelled at my kids a lot. And I've apologized a million times for him. And I will apologize a million times more. You know, they're my life, my boys, they're my best friends. And how to find myself, that's why I went to Merrill Lynch, was successful, but I wasn't Wall Street successful. Wasn't that kind of money and quit that job, got another job, was successful, quit that job, got, and that's when I just bounced around and
makes sense.
6 years later, left Hawaii, got back to the real world, as I like to say. I love visiting Hawaii, by the way. Got to California, convinced my now ex-wife to move there. We always shared custody with the children. And we're good friends now, you know, 18 years later of divorce. Insurance, Trinet, which is the private insurance company, outsourced HR, and just always successful. Because if you can sell, you can sell. So it was now when my youngest got 10 years old, I want to advance my career and kind of got tied back into the private equity world, in a sense, companies that were owned by PE firms, and that fueled my fire, which I still have for Wall Street. And so I'm a hired gun, and I was able to cross industries because I believe I'm a good leader. I'm a leader who's wears his heart on his sleeve, but also will put a foot up your ass. And I care about my people. And old Herb Kellerin, who took over Southwest Airlines in the 80s, you know, he had a very simple philosophy that everyone back then was like, you're crazy. He goes, if I take good care of my employees, they'll take good care of my clients. And that's how he built Southwest from bankruptcy to what it is. And that's always my philosophy. So if you believe, as I always say, if I believe in the snow, I can sell it to an Eskimo. You just have to believe in what you're selling and believe in your people. You can do anything. And so, yeah, I can go across industries to, who thought at 53 years old, I'd be figuring out what AI is, because my co-founder and best friend, Jason, said, he's the fitness brain by it. I'm the business guy. He says to me one day, have you heard ChatGPT? And this was February of 23, right? Yeah, last year. And I laughed. I go, yeah, I'm a tech guy. I mean, I like tech. And the light bulb went off 5 minutes later. Finally, we can take your brain and put it into an app, short version of that story. And the things I've learned over the last year, because I am passionate. I'm passionate about building this. I'm a lifelong learner. That's two. How can you switch industries? Are you passionate about learning something new? Take your core beliefs, your core skills, and make them better by learning something new. I've been reinventing myself my whole life. I was, before 9/11, I would have been on pace to retire at the age of 40, which to me back then was $5 million in the bank and done. And I was well on my way. Like I said, God had other plans. He drove an airplane into a building next to me. And, you know, a lot of people, I mean, obviously some tragedies that day, right? Horrible. For me, it was a blessing. Some people don't understand that. My two sons are 22 and 30, and they're my best friends in the world because I walked away from Wall Street, not on purpose. I went kicking and screaming for a decade. But if I didn't, I wouldn't have been coaching Little League every night. I wouldn't have the relationship I have with my boys. And I have friends who did the Wall Street career, men and women. They typically have a different relationship with their kids than I do.
Makes sense.
So, no regrets.
Looking back at that day, those 10 years, what do you take away from it? What do you keep with you? What's your biggest learning from that event and the period that follows?
Resilience. You don't know, you know, say when you're in the middle of a storm, you don't know, you don't always see who's around you there. Yeah. I'm a very faithful man. God's front and center in my life. And, you know, the old adage, and I'm sure I'll mess it up, but is, you know, the guy says to God, when I was struggling, why weren't you walking with me? And it's the footsteps in the sand. And God says, I was carrying you. It was only my footsteps, not yours. You don't know that when you're in the middle of it. And somehow you, lots of time to get down on your knees and just cry and just say, help me. What'd you take from me? Those 10 years, I didn't know enough yet to have the reflection in life that I do now and to say, what do I need to learn? God just threw me a lifeline at the end of the 10 years. That was a job I tried out. It was Jason, another Jason, and he knows Jason Pauling, if he hears it, that job. And I told him a few years later, I go, you saved my life. You saved my kids. Because I was a month and a half before I took that job. And I mean this story as a learning, no disrespect to anyone who, for this other story, is graduated from college, got my college degree, like makes a big deal, and, you know, Wall Street and all that. And I was just getting my ass kicked every day financially, you name it. I was living with my mother, 40 odd years old. And I sat across a guy outside a garage in a warehouse about to take a job to sell garage doors and install. From the high, 26 years old, running a multi-billion dollar business, Wall Street business in Tokyo. And he looked at me, he goes, I know where you're at. He goes, I've been there. You'd be great at this. You know, I'll never make six figures again. Not that money's everything, it's not. He goes, the job's yours, but you call me in 48 hours and tell me. I need you to really think, are you ready to walk away from your life? That's what he said to me. Got in my car and I cried. I cry a lot, but I'm a Cancer. And I just looked up. I go, God, what am I supposed to do? And for some reason, I didn't take that job.
You talk about resilience. How does someone find or develop that skill without being in the trenches?
Without God kicking your butt? Who are the people around you? They always say, who are the five people around you? Five people in business. five people in your spiritual life, your health life, your personal life, et cetera. Are there people around you who can share stories like we're talking about today? Do you seek those stories to figure out what it means? And are you listening to podcasts like this and the great information, the great people you always bring on here, so you can learn something to say, I don't know enough resilience. Thankfully, maybe you haven't had to face some of the things. Yeah. And listen, people have faced significantly worse than I'll ever face. Don't get me wrong, but it's what I've faced.
Yeah, 100%.
Just have an open mind, open ears, open eyes, open heart, and talk to people. Understand, ask, actually care about learning other stories. And when you hear them, how does it resonate? So if you haven't gotten your butt kicked yet in life, eventually, I hope it doesn't, but something will to some level. It's experience. You can only read so much about resilience in a book.
Makes sense. The reason I asked is, the reason I started the podcast, the idea is I want to talk to people, understand their journeys like you're talking about, but I want to not focus on what happened in the last month, right? I want to do the 5-10 year journey and how did you get here? Your resilience, you learned along the way. What was learnings? First start a fail, second fail, third fail. Like I want to highlight that. Mm-hmm. Idea being, even if someone early can see this and be like, oh, that resonated with my journey. And my thesis is that it's hard for people to be vulnerable. It's hard to say, oh, hey, my company isn't working. And like, I need help with X. I don't know a lot of people who are very open about XYZ isn't working. I need help, and going out and asking for help.
Yep.
And so the idea being, okay, does this journey match yours? Can you take one or two things away? And so from that perspective, I feel like a lot of people say, oh yeah, you gotta be passionate, you gotta have resilience, you gotta be in it for the long haul. But someone who hasn't done it or hasn't been through something similar, it's hard to relate.
Yep.
Because everything seems easier, right? It's surface level versus understanding mm-hmm. the nitty gritty.
If you're an inquisitive person and you are listening, I mean, I know the guests you bring on, they're amazing. And you're willing to just listen to people's journeys to what can I get a little bit out of? Read a book. What can I get a little bit out of? You don't have to get it all.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. If you're inquisitive and you're a lifelong learner, you'll get there. You know, that's what it is. And listen, I hope everyone listening never has a bad day. We all know a little better. But doesn't go through a 9/11, you know, growing up where you had days, you didn't know if you were going to have food in your belly. So there's people much worse than I've ever had. Yeah. You know, you've tragedy, lost someone in your life, you name it. Listen to people. Again, if anyone only remembers one thing from me today, go seek a mentor and constantly seek more mentors for all aspects of your life and understand the mentor for your business may be, but a lot of times will not be the mentor for your faith, your health journey, your life journey, relationships, etc. I have so many mentors. I wish in my 20s I knew they were an actual mentor. I know who they are. I know Mike. I know Tony. I know John. Joanne, I know I wouldn't have been successful in the 10 years I was in investment banking without those four people. But I wish I knew then how to use them the way I talk about now. So if that's the only thing you hear today, then I'm good.
So a couple of guests I've had on before, I've asked them, how do they approach mentorship? How do they have those conversations? And I feel like a lot of people who've never had mentors will be like, well, here's my story. Here's what I'm doing. Here's all this background. And my take is, unless you're establishing a long-term relationship with the mentor, they don't need all the background. They need here's what I'm working on. Here's the challenge. I want your inputs on X, Y, Z. Start there until you build a relationship.
Agreed.
But people spend all this time like, I did this, I did that, I did this, I'm doing all of this. But I mean, they spend 5 minutes on what they're doing and they never really get true value out of it. I feel like there's a lot of skill building needed, even on how to be a mentee. Not a lot of people talk about this, but
I agree.
It's just how to be a good mentee, get value, give value, be respectful of time. But
I posted actually. I'm a board member for UT Macomb Center for Global Business, and January was Mentorship Month, and so I wrote an article which they end up posting on LinkedIn, so you can go find it. And I talk about both sides of it. If you're a mentee and you ask me for my time as Scott, as a mentor, you show up early, not on time, right? The old, you know, some coaches, if you're 5 minutes early, you're late. Show up early, come with questions, and just look to get to know my story, because my story is going to give you a lot of what you need, and then be inquisitive and ask more questions. And it's okay to ask a question. Well, that's interesting, Abe. You know, based on what you said here, I see it could, you know, this lesson could fit into what I'm trying to do here. What do you think? Mentors want to talk, right? That's why people take mentorship. Yeah. They might not admit that piece. We want a microphone and we want to talk. You know, we want to give back and all that good stuff too. So be interested in them, the mentor, and you're going to get all the information, because a good mentor, I know you, me, I know so many of them out there, we're going to start asking questions. What are you struggling with today? Where do you want to be in a year? What are your goals? Except, you know, where do you need the most help? So just show interest in the mentor, and the rest will work itself out.
Makes sense.
But be early. Don't like be late.
I think on the mentor mentee, initially when I started, I mean, knowing everything I know now, I would have done things very differently over the last 5-6 years. But it's always in hindsight, right?
Hindsight 2020, as grandma said.
But I think the biggest challenge that I initially faced was, okay, how do you find someone who resonates? Because a mentor is not always about experience. It's about thinking style, thinking philosophy. They have to, I personally feel that has to vibe with you on that level, right? Mm-hmm. And like you said, I feel like there's some people I'd go to for topic X or decision X,
yep.
But I wouldn't value their opinion on Y for whatever reason, right? Because like, I think you're expert on this. But for this, I want to go to this person.
Agree.
I've toyed around with the idea of like creating a personal board of directors. I would like to at some point. I just haven't got around to it. But I've thought about the idea of, hey, who are 3 to 5 people whose opinion I respect, whose input I would want on things, and be like, hey, once a month, 30 minutes, I'm going to walk you through what I'm doing, what I want to do, challenges, next steps. And I just want direction, right? Like,
yep.
Good, bad. Maybe I'll go do what I was going to do, but I still want the opinion of whether it works or not. At some point, I'll try to do that. So we'll see, but
go do it. I agree.
I've thought about the idea.
It's great.
What I think I personally suffer with on that front is not suffer, but like have a difficulty with is, can I ask for 30 minutes of someone's time? If yes, how can I pay back that time in whatever capacity? Because if I'm asking for 30, 40 minutes from someone every month, I want to make sure it's of value to them and I can also deliver some at some point. I don't think I will be over the next couple of years, but until then, how do I ask for that time and what can I give in return? That's why I haven't done this yet more than any other.
You know what you give in return? You give 2 things. Number one, value their time.
Yeah.
And like you said, I want to go in. I've got an agenda. I love when a mentee shows up with an agenda, because in the end, this is all about the mentee. It's not about me, the mentor. I can put myself up on a pedestal.
Yeah.
It's about them. You do 2 things. One, at least this is what I always say to my mentees. Value my time. So show up with a plan. Come inquisitive. Have a few. You don't have to have 20 questions, but have 3 that put us down the proverbial rabbit hole. Hopefully a good one. The second, pay it forward. And I've gotten to know each other over the last couple of months and looking at some projects and jobs, just getting to know each other as friends and all that. You absolutely have something to give to someone. And so, you know, if someone reaches out to you, be a mentor.
Yeah. I think it's more self-doubt than anything, but no, I understand what you're saying. I was talking to someone the other day, random sidebar. I don't like the word thought leader, because I feel like everyone who starts calling themselves a thought leader, personally, I would only feel comfortable saying I know X if I've done it for 20 years, right? I want to feel like I know that subject before I go into it and claim to be a thought leader in the space. But I feel like that word is thrown around so much where I'm like, I have opinions. I know the topic you're talking about, but I don't consider myself experienced enough to call myself a thought leader. But I understand what you're saying, but it's more self-doubt than anything else.
I hate the term thought leader too. We're in agreement there. You don't have to be a thought leader. You and I got together over the weekend, had a coffee, you know, we're talking about some things as for the next development of the app when we get there. And as I said, you told me a couple of things. I go, say that again. I got to write it down. You have an expertise.
Yeah. Makes sense.
That's all that matters.
Makes sense. Hey there, Austin pet parents. Are you tired of scrambling for a reliable pet sitter every time you're away? Or maybe you're a pet lover looking to lend a helping hand to your neighbor's need. Well, listen up, because I've got something exciting to share with you. Introducing Neighbor's Pet, the innovative dog boarding platform that's changing the game for pet care. Here's how it works. Neighbor's Pet operates on a credit system. When you host someone's furry friend, you earn credits that you can use to have your own pet taken care of when you're away. It's a win-win for everyone involved. Plus, Neighbor's Pet isn't just a service, it's a community. You'll connect with other pet parents in your area, building trust and forming bonds with fellow animal lovers who understand the importance of reliable pet care. So whether you're planning a weekend getaway or simply need a helping hand with your four-legged friend, Neighbor's Pet has you covered. Sign up today and join the growing community of pet parents who are leaning on each other for peace of mind and the love their pets deserve. Visit neighborspet.com to learn more and get 2 free credits when you sign up. Free credits means free nights of boarding because as busy pet parents, it's your turn to be off leash. Sign up for Neighbor's Pet today. Going back to the journey, finance roles, sales roles, Feb 2023, you decide to start myworkout.ai. Very quickly, can you tell the audience what myworkout.ai is and then what's the plan? And we'll go deeper into that last year and a half of building myworkout.ai.
Sure. It's a personal trainer in your pocket is our fancy tagline. And it'll be just that. It is going to give you, you know, if you, whether you work out at home or you go to the gym, it's that expert by your side that says, here's what you're going to do today. And that's the simple version of it. Now, what I believe will set us apart are a few things, our 3-pillar approach, which is what Jason's done his 3 decades. Again, I'm the business guy. I can put my foot in my mouth a little bit here. Is pillar number one, movement assessment. How many apps do you download out there? Where, and I just downloaded another one yesterday because this is part of, you got to check them all out. 2 minutes in, here's your workout, Scott. I had one app last April. I remember it was last April because I was going up to New Hampshire to take my son out of college. And within 2 minutes, it gave me a workout. And like, I work out 6 days a week. It goes, all right, great. You're going to do dumbbell curls for biceps, 45 pounds each. I work out with 20 to 22, 25 pounds. And I was like, maybe I'm wrong. I'm like, no. And then 3 days later, I'm in a hotel room with my son. And he's 6'5", 22 years old, athlete. And he goes, what else you do when there's nothing on TV? He goes, let's go down to the gym and see who's stronger, Dad. So I go, let me grab a 35-pound weight. I almost ripped my arm off. So movement assessment. I have to understand the functionality of your body. Doesn't matter if we're both 6 foot whatever and the same weight. Yeah. As Jason likes to say, no offense to anyone, he always says that too. I got to know if you have one arm or two. Yeah. So our app is going to ask you a handful of questions so we can score you from a movement assessment. Pillar number two is movement over muscles. It's functional movement. We all want to move better so we feel better. By the way, the muscles come too. You'll look better too. But functional movement. And the third pillar is obviously the AI. We've taken Jason's RIP is what's Jason's brain and how he can look at you, score you, and creates a workout program for you for your next month, 2 months.
Yep.
And the AI takes that, but what the AI does that Jason, no trainer can do as fast, is every time you interact, it's going to potentially tweak your program. This was too light. This was too heavy. Ooh, my shoulder hurts today. So that you're constantly feeling challenged, but not over-challenged. Feeling this isn't boring in the same routine. It's changing. It's tweaking, yep. Which means you will stay engaged. You won't plateau. Those three pillars set the technology apart. But what's more important to me is within the app is the community. And we're building an app within the app, if you want to call it that, so that we can have a shared journey, right? Fit and 50 will be one of the little community. That's for me and anyone else in my age group, you know, or hey, to the new mom trying to find time to work out.
Yeah.
And we'll come up with better names for that, piece, along with the overall community as well. My marketing person hates when I say this, but to the couch potato, you know, I'm 200 pounds overweight and I can't get off the couch. Help me take the first step. So we want to build a community because there's a couple statistics out there that make me want to scream. Number one, 75% of all workout programs I do, whether it's an app or a trainer, just don't meet my needs. Again, the three pillars will make sure it does. In the second part, over 50% of people start a workout program, a wellness program, quit within 6 months.
Yeah.
If we can just move the needle on that one,
yeah,
to where only, I'd like to say no one quits, but you know, I get it, reality. Can we move the needle by 10%, by 30%? We start to change the world. So that's phase one of the app and what it is. But then it goes much more into a whole health and well. Again, I can see 5 years out.
Yeah. Okay. Quickly before we get into the journey of building What's the why? What's your why for myworkout.ai? Why do you want to do this?
My personal why, and the app ties into it, but my personal why has always been, I want to remove the perceived walls and ceilings we all put around ourselves that hold us back from the true success God meant for us to have. We're our own worst enemies, myself included. I have some mentors in my life go, did you put that wall up again yesterday? I'm like, maybe. Right? So under that, so what's next? Now let's break it down. And this journey was first, I wanted to help my friend reach the world. And it became, I am about health and wellness, it's been a big part of my life. And how do I democratize access to expert advice to underserved communities?
Makes sense.
Listen, you and I can afford an app, can afford a trainer. You know, we sit in a studio, which is one of the new premier training facilities and gyms in Austin. We can afford it. Most people can't. And it's not about what I can, you don't pay it forward by what you can do. It's how do you lift up everyone? We don't have judgment. Like I said, I don't care if a doctor says you got to lose 100 pounds. If you just want to lose 5, we want to help you. Don't care where you come from, your economic background, your sexual, I mean, all that stuff. I don't give a damn. If you got a good heart and you want to be a little healthier, we want to be part of that.
Makes sense. Sweet. So for someone with a finance and sales background, going to build, I don't want to call it a tech company, but like a starting out AI tech company. What does the first month look like for you? How do you start this? What do you do? What's your go-to? How do you figure out what to do?
So when the light bulb moment, which was the end of February 23, went off, it's like, then my journey, which I think this part of the journey is similar for most people with that light bulb moment, is what does that look like? Is that possible? Like, Jason, right? He goes, you can't do that. I go, no, that's what AI does. He goes, no, I can go. And then he's like, but 24-hour fitness is already done. I go, no, they actually haven't. So I go, they might buy it from us one day. So it's starting to figure out all the reasons why you can't do this. And I know that sounds strange for a lot of people, but the first week was, why won't this work? And you keep answering, it's not going to work because of A. Actually, no, that's not true. We can make this work. What about for B? No, and so you start building confidence. Okay. Then, as we've said, I'm not a coder. I'm not a computer engineer or an AI. You know, I'm a business expert. That's my expert. So
how long did you guys spend mapping out that logic, the platform, the workflow, before you decide to build anything?
In April is when I cut the first check after talking to people like yourself, development companies. Can we do this? Here's our idea. And they said yes. And so that was about 2 months later.
Okay.
And then, like I said, I cut the first check, bootstrap. And my background of investment banking was like, I can go raise the money when I need it. So in the summer, we raised $50,000. And that was it. That's all we've ever raised to date. And kept working with the developers. Here's what we do. And then, as one of my advisors, Hilda was really good at this, one of my advisors, and she's very successful in her career, what she's done. She goes, you got to figure out how to get that genius out of Jason's head. And she was much better at connecting with Jason, along with Trevor, our CTO. Now, Trevor and Jason have been best friends since they're about 6 years old. So where I am just kind of just 1 + 1 = 2, let's go. And that's not how Jason's brain works. Yeah. So they help Jason literally get it onto a spreadsheet. And then you get that to the technology people and they ask a lot of questions and it's just back and forth.
Yeah.
No, you can't do that. And people learn quickly on the team. Both our team of, there's 5 of us who are technically my workout AI people, along with our partners, our technology partners. You're not allowed to tell me I can't do something. You're not allowed to say that. Now, in the end, we might come back and say, we can't do this. But the first response is, that's interesting. Not sure. Let's talk more. Get the proverbial whiteboard out.
Yeah. So you start in April. When are you supposed to have MVP out?
Last November. It's now April again.
So the reason I ask, and I know sort of the backstory, but what I'm trying to get out is, what's the expectation, a non-tech person, and I've dealt with a lot of non-tech founders, but how do you go from, okay, November, I have to have MVP out, you're making business plans, keeps getting delayed. We're now April 2nd, date of recording this, and app's going to be out probably in a week or two or like pretty soon, right? But the founder, how do you manage that? How do you deal with that? What's your go-to? Like, just talk through that a little bit.
That's where a lot of experience comes in. Honestly, it's my fourth decade in the business world and obviously great advisors, mentors. Those dates I gave you came from my development team and the company that we ended up going with. They said, we'll have it by November. And I said, okay, you're my expert. I'm hiring you, partnering with you to be my expert. So I'm listening to you. Now, the businessman in me says, MVP comes out the first week of November, version one that we will launch and start charging subscriptions was December 27th. Great New Year's resolutions. We'll launch January 1.
Like ride the wave and
Yep. And obviously that didn't happen. And not, we can get that. The rest of the story, is the development company didn't tell us. And it's not a lack of ability to develop their business and how they communicated or lack thereof. That's why we're in delays. So while I said, if we're supposed to come out, start getting revenue January 1st, let me put it to second week of February. So I buffered that. At the same time, the first week of January, when it didn't come out, I went to, okay, do I need to go raise capital? Where are we at? And again, this is where four decades of business comes in, plus also my advisor. So even if you don't have the experience I have the advisors around you who do, who can help you have that conversation. And you plan for the worst case scenarios. You put buffers in there, especially when it comes to dates. We're supposed to have, we're launching this week. So we're getting into the App Store this week. We'll test it before we officially launch at the end of the month.
That's if Apple approves.
If Apple approves, we're on version 91. So we're pretty sure they'll approve. But you're right. And these are all things I learned, by the way, along the way. Well, they told us in November, Apple was starting to, end of 23, say, we don't want 1,000 of the same apps. So they're like, we're not sure they'll approve you. Wait, we're six figures in. They go, we think they will because of the AI and blah, blah, blah. So they did, at least the betas and all that stuff. Listen, what made Steve Jobs great? What makes Bill Gates,
resilient?
Warren Buffett, yes, all that. But they somehow, great leaders, Elon Musk, Richard Branson, they see three steps in front of everyone else. They see, we're in a room where the door's closed. They can see two doors down and what's in that room. You have to become that as a startup founder. And I'm sure your next question is, how do you do that? Be inquisitive, ask questions. Once we build it, John is one of my mentors and advisors. We talk every week, but we have an official call every other week. And when we got real close, we set a meeting on purpose. And I do this in all my businesses when I was a CRO, CEO, et cetera. And the meeting is just about why this will fail miserably. We gut check it. We stress test it, the idea. You got to do that along the way a few times.
I like that because there's this concept of like making assumptions. And when I'm talking to someone super early on, my first recommendation is write down every assumption you can think of. And there should be 25 plus assumptions. And what needs to be true for this to work, what should be true, and what is irrelevant. Because that helps you understand, oh, my customer has to want to do X. But until you write it down and think of it, like, oh yeah, everyone wants this. Because everyone, for a startup founder, their idea is golden. It has to work.
Best.
Yeah, everyone wants it and is dying for it to be out there. But you also ask yourself, if everyone wants it, why does it not already exist, right? And so I like the idea of talking through failure situations because it at least makes it very abundantly clear. My recommendation is fail fast. Like, I would rather you fail fast than spend 2 years building something.
And a lot of money.
Yeah. And that's always my, there's so many people like, I want to build X and build a platform and do this. And like, I need this whole B2B side. I'm like, but that has nothing to do with the problem you came to me with. So why do you want $200,000 worth of software? Like, you don't need it, but.
Yeah. I'll add one more thing into the litmus test, or excuse me, stress test of it all.
Yeah.
Don't just go to the experts in your industry that you're trying to build your app, your idea. My oldest son, from high school into military special forces, served our country, all that great stuff. He was, when the idea came out, now he's a fitness guy, he works out a lot. Yeah, I said this to him all the time. I go, you should be a business coach after we had this conversation, because I was like, hey, here's what I'm working on, Jess. He's like, 2 hours later, I'm sitting at the kitchen table with him and I'm like, my head spinning. I'm like, where'd you come up with those questions? And they were the best questions that are a big part of why we're successful. So my point, the moral of that story is, and that was early on, but I seek people who have nothing to do with fitness, nothing to do with technology, business, and just say, how's this idea sound to you? You know, my brother, who's a business person, but not in the fitness world. I'll talk to a stranger on an airplane. Seek opinions from people who you don't think have an expertise.
Makes sense. I like that. So app's going to be live. You've gone through this whole process of getting out there, understanding tech. How do you personally, as a non-tech founder, sort of deal with those delays and also deal with the lack of understanding? Because personally, the reason I'm asking is there's going to be a bunch of founders listening who maybe tech, maybe non-tech, and there's always the other side which you don't understand. So when there's delays, when there's issues, how do you not get frustrated and be like, okay, app's not ready. Why isn't it ready? And you talked about being inquisitive, but what else has worked for you in this process of getting a technical app out there where you're always, I don't want to say one step behind, but you're sort of relying on others to make decisions and get out there.
Like Steve Jobs said, you find the smartest people in the world, you hire them, you get the heck out of their way. You give them the resources they need to get the heck out of their way, which means you trust your gut and who you hired. So technically, I haven't hired really anyone because we don't pay salaries yet. But I have advisors who we pay in equity. Or I just have my network of people. I've been blessed with a great network that I can just, can I buy you coffee? Can I buy you wine, a dinner, a lunch? And ask them and pick their brain.
Makes sense.
And admit, a big part of what you said is I first have to admit someone knows more than me.
100%.
That's easy for me. I got no problem with that. My ego, I have an ego, but that part, no. So you surround yourself with the right people. And yeah, you ask a lot of questions. Also, I know a lot about AI. Now, I can't program it, but
you've learned.
I've learned because I want to make sure I might be the person at the table with the least amount of knowledge, but I'm going to make sure I have enough knowledge so I can call bullshit. That's what a CEO is. You need a nut. So if you don't have that knowledge, whatever it is, I do 2 Audible books a month at least. I read books, podcasts, the AI conference here a year ago in Austin, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You got to get knowledge.
100%. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Couple quick questions I like asking every guest. What's your support system that helps you keep the startup running? Everything, kids, family, whatever. What's your support system?
Faith in God and what my journey is, what my purpose is. Like, I'm not a religious person, but God's front and center in my life. Faith in myself, believe it or not, I'm a big part of my own support system. And what I mean by that is, obviously, I'm a health and wellness company. I make sure I hit the gym 6 days a week at least, walk almost every day outside of that. I like my burgers and fries, don't get me wrong, but I don't eat them often. And, you know, it's spinach salad for lunch today and most days. So I got to take good care of myself. And then you're right, I'm not afraid to be, you mentioned earlier, it's hard to be vulnerable for people. Maybe I'm just too old at this point. So for those who are a couple decades younger than me, in my 20s, I wasn't as vulnerable as I am now because there's strength in vulnerability. You think it's weakness when you're younger. And so I let people know when I'm struggling. And, you know, my 2 sons, they're 22 and 30. They are my best friends. I hide zero from them. And some parents might be, huh? I'm like, nope, they know everything. Building a legacy to change the world because they're going to be here longer than me. And then it's your friends. It's
makes sense.
Your business. Go on a LinkedIn to find someone who can help me with what I'm struggling with. To the mentor conversation, I tell me, just go on LinkedIn and reach out to people. Come from a place of humility. And I really would like to ask for your help. I want to be you one day. Looks like you've had a great journey in. I'm just starting out. Can I buy you a virtual coffee? And if they're in town, buy them an actual coffee.
Makes sense.
If you can afford it.
I like that. What are 3 resource recommendations you have for founders or people building who are listening? Resource could be book, podcast, blog, article, whatever you want. What are 3 resource recommendations?
The first one is see who the people are around you. That's before you go to the books and everything. Who's around you, who you know can, to your last question, can be your support staff because you're going to have some tough days. It doesn't go perfect. So that in a lot of communities now, there's so much free here in Austin, obviously Capital Factory, so much free stuff, right? They're awesome. but you can do a lot of online events, even if you're in the middle of wherever.
Yeah.
So just go online and search startup founder, startup tech, whatever, startup, whatever it is, and start listening to things for free. And then you're on there, see who's on there, private message them. Hey, can I buy you the virtual coffee? There's so many great books out there. I mean, I've got a list if anyone wants to reach out to me, but off the top of my head, Limitless by Jim Quick. How do you think differently? The Code of the Extraordinary Mind by Vishen. If you look at Code of Extraordinary Mind, it's about how do you not think the way society taught you? Presentation Secrets of Steve Jobs. That's at the top of the list.
Okay.
Starts with Why by Simon Sinek is the last one I'll throw out there.
I went to something this morning where that was a book recommendation.
So. Yep.
It's on my shelf. I haven't read it yet, so I got to read it.
It's a fast read.
What's your startup tech stack? How do you run your business? What tools and apps or whatever do you use?
That's a great question. I don't know if I mentioned to you when we had coffee the other day. That's the book I'm going to write because I'm doing this journey very differently. I come from the VC and private equity world, and I have my opinions of them. They're brilliant. At least they think they are. Because of AI in the last year, I've been able to do this business, and I'm not talking about the AI that's going to be in our app, without having to raise probably $500,000. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting here talking. And the AI, so obviously ChatGPT is the easy one, and I use it every day. There's different versions. Pay the $20. It's worth it. Is it Genesis? I can't remember why that, but we're in my office. It's all lit on board. V.io is where we've done all the videos because I can't afford a videographer yet to edit them. There's so many things out there. Like I know we're doing about an hour here that, you know, later on, there's so many different softwares. Again, if you want, I'll give you the list. I can't
remember. Yeah.
Where it'll splice it up for you.
Yeah.
We've got 15 different eBooks on our website. Read them. They're great. Design.io, I think what was the software, the AI software. Again, you got to still give it input. It just spits it out for you. But all things you need to start putting things out there's so many things. Those are the big ones. I have a spreadsheet for my CRM. If you're going to start raising money, there's a lot of networks out there where, I think Angel Network off the top of my head is one that a little bit of the money we raised came from there. I just started creating, using ChatGPT along with my prompting to create the quick paragraph to send to a bunch of angel investors.
Nice.
Will you please have a coffee with me virtually so I can tell you why you should give me $10,000?
Yeah.
Whole bunch of stuff.
Okay. But we'll get a list, link everything and do that. I do this thing on my show where I ask every guest a question for a future guest. So your question from a past guest is, what drives you to do what you do?
I want to leave the world a better place. I know that sounds corny. It goes to my why. I want to remove the perceived walls and ceilings. I want to leave the world a better place and show my kids how to do that so that they can pay it forward.
What would be your question for a future guest?
Wow. That's a great one. What's the reason you get up every morning?
Makes sense. I feel like every time I ask someone, I'm like, what would my answer be? I don't always have an answer, but I'm like, I don't know why I get up every day. Like I haven't solved that, but it's fun to ask that.
You have time.
Yeah. No, I was,
by the way,
we were talking about
all these questions. Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
You have time.
Yeah.
You're right. You and I talked about that over coffee over the weekend.
Yeah.
Keep a couple stats in mind, which drive me to be 54 years old this July. Colonel Sanders, Kentucky Fried Chicken, struggled until he was about 60 years old, give or take a couple of years, and became Colonel Sanders. Walt Disney was bankrupt 3 or 4 times, I forget.
Yeah.
Didn't really make it until he was in his 50s. You have time.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if it's the McDonald's founders that started McDonald's when he was 55, 60, something super late, but no.
Yeah.
I think it's immaturity more than immaturity and impatience, right? Like it's, you don't know what you don't know. And part of the reason I started this podcast was I feel like social media pushes this narrative of buy this course, do this, sell this, and you can retire in that's the narrative everyone pushes. That's the clickbaity stuff. But I've been running my agency for 5-6 years, probably want to shut it down 100 different times, right? For various different reasons. But for some reason, I still have it going. And I think it's just, you got to fall off the bicycle to learn how to ride the bicycle.
Yeah.
And you just got to go through the repetitions and it'll come. But everything, all the information that surrounds you is like, you got to go faster, you got to do more. And part of me is I don't know if I do, but there's this pressure and sentiment that I'm just impatient, but
it's a
part of the process.
Can I change my question for the next person?
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Do you believe in yourself?
I'll keep both of them. I'll ask two different. Yeah. Sweet. But no, that's all I had.
Awesome.
Where can folks find you? Where should they reach out? And what's the next challenge you're trying to solve for myworkout.ai?
So they can find us easily at myworkout.ai. So www.myworkout.ai. That's our contact form. Sign up, get on the wait list so you can get access to the app as soon as it comes out in a couple of weeks. Signups with an S, signups at myworkout.ai is the email address. And we're all over Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, myworkout at myworkout.ai. So you can find us there. The next challenge is get it launched. Nice. That's still the first challenge, actually. You know, in tech, we've had delays and it's coming. Not worried about it.
Yeah.
But survive till it launches and we can start bringing in revenue, which will be this month, I believe.
Sweet. This episode will go live in a couple of weeks, but we'll link everything. If the app is live, but then we'll link all that stuff, but I'll get all that info from you and we'll...
Sounds good.
Sweet. But thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning into Funds and Founders. If you're a local Austin founder, a venture capitalist, or just someone who's building and in the middle of their journey and would like to be featured on an upcoming episode, submit your guest pitch to abhinavsinha.podcast@gmail.com. If you have a founder-specific event you'd like to promote on the podcast, you can also reach out to me. If you want to continue to get support through your founder journey, hit the follow button and I'll see you in the next episode.